Before we get started, just a quick note. We talk about St. Bonaventure very briefly at the end of this episode, and since the recording, Kyle Lofton, Ashun Ashunahi, and Dominic Welch all announced that they would be entering the transfer portal, in addition to keeping their name into the NBA draft. So while it's still possible that they come back to the Bonnies, at this point it seems highly, highly unlikely. So take that into consideration when you hear that part that we discussed with Sam Basil. Enjoy the episode. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Three Bid League podcast. We're going to talk transfers again. We're not done. If you haven't listened already, go back to part one where we talk about St. Louis and VCU. But we're going to kick this episode off with some Davidson talk. Right after that, we're going to go to our good pal Sam Basil to talk about Fordham's hire of Keith Ergo as head coach. But as promised, I am your host, Tyler, with my co-host, Matt. We're joined by Joe DeMartin of the Belk Report to talk about Davidson's offseason. Joe, thank you for coming on the show.
Very excited to be here. Was very excited when I saw the DM. I was even more excited when certain other Belk reporters had too much law school work. So I'm, you know, pinch hitting here a little bit. So, but hopefully I can still deliver in the big moment here. So very excited. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are allowed to bring multiple people on to this at once, but you do get the solo act here. And so we'll start as we have with on the other previews here, talking about the incoming guys. And for Davidson, I think the biggest name is a transfer over from William & Mary, a forward, Connor, I believe it's Coquera, who was...
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Ago.
And then kind of took a little bit of a step back this year, but what have you guys seen in your research on him so far?
Yeah, well, the biggest thing is I'm really excited to learn how to pronounce his name. I don't know yet, but we'll see. He'll have to give us a little bit of a guide there. But Connor, which I think we can be safe on that one. Connor is maybe. I think Connor. Yeah, Connor was a really awesome pickup for us. I was really excited about it once I started to dig into it a little bit more in terms of what I think he can bring to the table. You kind of alluded to this sort of overview in the highlight in terms of the CAA Rookie of the Year. You know, obviously lots of talent and lots of potential there. But last year, what we did see was a little bit of a dip in field goal percentage, three-point percentage. So, you know, if you kind of look at it and you're just looking at the numbers, you're like, well, what exactly is the story here? But if you dig at least one level deeper, you'll see, I have two words written down, system and stability. And that's what I think Connor is coming into at Davidson. William & Mary, to be, I don't know that there's a kind way to say it. They weren't very good this year, this past year.
Sub 330 in KenPom. I couldn't even find them when I looked for them.
338 out of 358 on KenPom, 339 net ranking. So, you know, I would say a little bit to be desired from William & Mary. So I think that when you take a look at somebody like Connor, I think there's just potential in terms of bringing him into a place where he's not going to be the number one scoring option. He's going to be part of a larger system at Davidson and have better coaching, better stability with Bob McKillop, and just an overall better program at Davidson than William & Mary. And I think that is going to allow him really to thrive with us. So that's one that I know that the coaches are really excited about and that the program is really excited about. And as we started to look into him a little bit more, we also got really excited about him.
Yeah, and the good news too, it seems like Connor Coquera has a good shooting eye at the Belk Arena, because in a 70-46 drubbing, he did have 18 points against the Wildcats. So maybe that's a good sign of things to come.
But, you know, Belk Arena is always a great place to play. great place to be a fan. So it's maybe the vibes of the arena will help. That's that's a good point. I didn't even think of that.
But I mean, looking at his career though, like he's been a decent 3-point shooter. He's around 33-34% for his career. Like you mentioned, he won't really need to be the first option on Davidson, but do you see him sliding into the starting lineup this year, maybe replacing someone like Michael Jones or Hyungjin Lee at that spot?
Yeah, that's going to be, I mean, obviously, you know, to say to replace both those guys is going to be a real difficult challenge, you know. But in terms of sliding into the starting lineup, I think there's actually a really decent chance that he does. I think that's going to be that wing position kind of is going to be a really, really heavily rotated thing. We have a lot of young talent there. That I think the coaching staff wants to see and gain even more sort of idea of what we have there. But I wouldn't be surprised if we see him in a starting lineup at either the two or the three. It'll kind of depend a little bit on what, how the rest of the roster fills out, and just sort of looking at who might stay and who might leave still. But I think it'll be a little bit dependent on that. But I think it's a coin flip basically at this point. I could definitely see him in there providing good starting minutes, but in a heavy rotation with some of our younger guys at that position.
Yeah, and I could even see him potentially playing a little bit at the four if we go back to those more old school Bob McKillop shooters all over the place lineup, but that'll probably depend on whether those young wings can step up. But I want to talk about the other transfer they picked up, David Skogman from Buffalo, single-digit point scorer in the MAC. So obviously taking a step up from there, we shouldn't expect a ton of offensive production from him. Is he basically just the Nelson Bochy-Yedem replacement at this point?
I think looking at the rotation, looking at what we have right now, yeah, I think that's going to really be his position. He's tall. He's going to be, I think, the tallest listed guy on the roster at 6'10". Tall, long guy. Again, I hope that he sort of brings that energy that Nelson had. But the other sort of wrinkle in his game is that he shoots just a shade under 40% from three. So I think he'll bring, whereas Nelson, that really wasn't too much of a part of his game. I think David has the potential to be a little bit more of a floor spreader potentially. And you know, we know how Davidson loves the big men who can shoot outside. So I think we'll be able to use that, that skill to our advantage, definitely. But I wouldn't expect him to start. I think he's probably the first big man off the bench behind Sam Menenga and Reed Bailey. That would be my expectation, but you never know if things start to go well or somebody sees something, or he could find his way there. But I think right now that's definitely sort of three big guy rotation, that third big man in there.
Yeah, and amazingly, a guy with a kind of odd name in Skogman going to play in Davidson. He is actually, believe it or not, not Scandinavian. He is from Wisconsin.
Waukesha. So it's well known for the international talent that Bob McKill brings him. But that was one of the first things I also looked at. Looking at where these guys are from. But you know, again, I think it's I think with both of these guys, what you're looking at, I'm trying to phrase this the right way, you're not going to find guys really in the transfer portal that are going to replace Luka, that are going to replace Lee, that are going to replace Mike Jones. You're looking for people who will fit into the system here at Davidson and thrive. And that's what I think you have in both David and Connor here. I'm really excited to see what they do personally. And, you know, I also just have a blind faith and trust in our coaches and in Bob McKillop especially. So if they like a guy, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I can see anything, you know, that they, that I'm seeing anything that, or that they're missing anything that I'm seeing, if that makes sense. So if they like a guy, I'm really excited about that too.
Yeah, it really does. When you put it that way, it does sound like the Moneyball version of Atlantic 10 basketball, where you're not replacing Giambi, you're not replacing Luka. And same with like Johnny Damon and Hyungjoon Lee. Like, it's just impossible to replace those first team guys. But I think we have seen over the years that Bob McKillop has done a great job getting these unheralded guys. He doesn't use the transfer portal much, but when he does, it seems to work out like it did with Foster Lawyer a year ago. So,
right,
certainly going to be interesting. But earlier you mentioned Reed Bailey, who's a 3-star, 6'9" power forward. Davidson also has Sean Logan, another big guy coming in, and then Ricardo Giardini, a 6'7" guard. So anything you know about those guys? Do you see any of them breaking into the rotation this year?
Yeah, I think Reed definitely is a guy that we're looking at. As a Maryland native, the first person that comes to my mind when I think about Reed Bailey is a little bit of Jake Lehman. I don't know how many people know Jake Lehman on this podcast. I'm sure if you're into college basketball and you've been following it, but as a Maryland fan, that's kind of what I thought of, a really capable shooter, long and athletic. So he's probably looking at playing a lot of his time at the four, maybe the three. We have to kind of see how everything breaks out. I think probably given the other transfers, you probably are seeing him at the four quite a bit. And then Ricardo is an interesting one. Ricardo is a guy who was listed at guard, but given the sort of roster construction, I would not be surprised if he sort of takes on a little bit more of a wing role. Just because of his size, his athleticism, like I think that like fits a little bit better than like maybe a typical two. I think playing the three for him fits a little bit better, but with Sean, you know, it's hard to say in terms of rotation what we'll see. You know, obviously another guy who provides size, but given the transfer of Skogman in, I don't want to speculate about, you know, whether how much time he'll see in the rotation. Like, I think the now this is my English major coming out that I can't do the math on how many people were in our rotation last year, but I think our eight man rotation
was a
worked really right. Well, I'm like trying to add like starter plus 1, 2, 3. Yeah, but you know, I think that 8-man rotation worked out really well for us, and so I, who knows, it could be expanded to 9 and we could see Sean in there. But I think in terms of guys who you're definitely looking at, I think Reed is definitely a guy who is going to maybe find his way into the starting lineup. And then, you know, we'll have to wait and see with Ricardo, depending on the versatility there. And depending on, again, looking at a lot of other young guys, you have Emery Lanier and Dez Watson also. Dez showed a lot of mid-range skills, so I could see him playing starting minutes. It's just going to depend on sort of the ebb and flow of the season, I think, as to what we see lineup-wise. So that's kind of my thoughts on that. And I think it's also going to depend on, kind of one big name, Foster Lawyer. Still a little bit unsure about whether he's staying or going from what I'm seeing as the latest thing. I think a lot of people are, I think the winds are sort of shifting towards staying right now. But as soon as I say that, then the winds are going to shift another way towards leaving. So, so I'm not sure when we'll get a specific announcement on that, but I think just a lot of things to take into account there. It's gonna, when when you turn over as many people as Davidson does, those questions always sort of come up every offseason. And again, the coaching staff find a way to make it work. So that's, I think, again, I put my blind trust and faith in them to make it work. But yeah, that's a little bit of my insight on it.
Yeah, and Lawyer has missed the NBA draft deadline at this point, and we're now inching up. We're just a few days away from that kind of transfer eligibility deadline. So
yeah,
probably getting close to the point that if Foster Lawyer is coming back, we're going to know for sure here soon. But let's say that he does, because it's now April 27th. So I fully assume that if someone
I think that's a fair assumption,
they're returning. So let's say Foster Lawyer is back. I want you to take a stab. Who is the starting lineup for next year?
Okay. So with the, okay, here's how I'll do it. So Foster Lawyer comes back. My expecting starting lineup looks something like this. You have Foster at the one, obviously. Then I think it's a toss up between Connor and Dez at sort of the 2/3. I think one guy will be at the 2, one guy will be at the 3. You know, they're not interchangeable, at least in the offense that we played last year. I don't know, it's sort of those two guys at the wings. I think you have Reed Bailey starting at the 4 and Sam Manega at the 5. That's my guess. And then you get Grant as the first guy off the bench, basically, who can step in to play with Foster or and be a little bit more of a traditional 2-guard or take one of the wings off. And then you'll have Skogman as the first big off the bench in that 3 big man rotation. And then you'll have Storm Thrasterson, which is a guy we didn't talk about too much, who's from Iceland. So another international person who the coaching staff really loves. And I think he might sneak in as somebody who will get probably similar minutes to what Dez played this year. So I think that's generally your 8-man rotation. If you want to expand it out to 9 and maybe, you know, say Ricardo fits in here or Sean Logan fits in here, like, I don't think that's outlandish. But again, I think it'll depend on their development and what the coaches see in them over this offseason.
Yeah, and I think the Grant Huffman 6-man thing is going to be really fascinating because they're going to really need him for his defense this season.
Absolutely. But
obviously, starting him alongside Lawyer, that is a small backcourt. So mm-hmm. they're going to have to be careful with how they split up those minutes. Maybe they choose to give Lawyer a little bit extra rest this year, keep him fresh, try to keep him healthy all season, get Huffman some extra minutes that way. But you laid out to us kind of a pretty full roster, but certainly with the level of inexperience, there's some spots where you could improve if you hit the right guy in the transfer portal. Anybody out there right now that you got your eye on that people should be excited for the Wildcats if they can land them in the next few weeks?
That's a really good question, because I think from everything that we're hearing, I think the one guy that's sort of been brought up is Andrew Carr. I think his first name is Andrew.
Yeah, the SLU guys want him too.
Yeah, so I think that's the name that's been brought up. And then with the, as Skogman came over, that name kind of was, drifted out of our minds a little bit. At least I can't speak for the coaching staff. At least us at the Belk Report, you know, we were kind of focused a little bit more on Skogman. But I think that's the one guy who, if you're looking maybe for some more depth there, or maybe don't think Skogman is ready to jump right in and take that third big man role, then maybe that's a guy that you look at. But right now, like, other than if Foster decides to leave, which again, I think we're making a pretty safe assumption that he stays, but what I've learned from really closely following this transfer portal this year is that you sometimes never know when guys are staying and when guys are leaving. Sometimes you're in the portal, sometimes you're out of the portal, as our account tweeted with specific reference to one player. But I think right now that's a pretty full roster. I wouldn't be expecting another transfer, but I've been wrong before and will certainly be wrong more times. So, you know, I think Carr is the guy maybe to look out for, but I don't know. I think they're pretty happy with Skogman and the bigs that they have right now.
I guess the biggest question at this point, it's a lot of unknowns now. Even a guy like Huffman or Watson, we've seen them play. We haven't seen them in big minutes. Mm-hmm. So you cannot pick Sam Manenga. You cannot pick Foster Lawyer. Because I think we both – now, Lee not coming back hurts us a little bit for me. But both Matt and I think that Sam Manenga has a chance to be a superstar this year. Obviously, if Foster Lawyer simply can play the entire season, he'll be on the all-conference team. Mm-hmm. Outside of those two, who is the most likely to make an all-conference run on Davidson? And I'll expand it past this year, within the next 2 years.
Okay.
So you get a little bit of development here for these young guys.
I was going to say, that's helpful. The 2 years is certainly helpful.
Yeah, I think this year is probably just Kokera.
Yeah, I really love Reed Bailey. I think that he is going to be really good for us. I know other Belk Report people really love Reed Bailey too. We're all really high on Reed, and I am really excited to see him play. And I think eventually shine and hopefully become one of those all-conference guys. Because you brought up Sam, I just have to say, because I'm another guy who I love, Sam Manenga. If you're getting long shot odds on Sam Manenga for A10 Player of the Year, you heard it here first. Mm-hmm. I think that he showed flashes against Michigan State and in the A10 tournament of a guy who can, you know, shoot from three really, really effectively and drive to the basket and create his own shot that way really effectively. And I think if he develops in the post a little bit more, I think people should watch out for Sam Manenga. Not that anybody needs reminding of that, but that's my long shot for A10 Player of the Year. I just had to bring it up. And if that happens, we can go back to this podcast as evidence that I predicted it. So there you go.
If that happens, you get to come on the Sam Manenga Appreciation Pod alongside Kate Frazier, who knows almost nothing about the Atlantic 10, but knows about Sam Manenga to the point that he has pledged that he will come on our pod if Sam Manenga has the breakout year that we all believe he is destined for. So,
all right, I'm down.
We'll see Tate and we'll see Joe DeMartin on that pod. Joe, thank you for joining us today. Where can everybody find your great Davidson takes and your partner's wild transfer portal conspiracies?
It's a great way of describing it. Follow us at Belk Report on Twitter. Right now, our name is the Draft Luca and Lee Report, because we're really rooting for those guys. As sad as it is that they won't be in Wildcat uniforms, we're really rooting for those guys to have the best success at the next level of basketball. But follow us at Belk Report on Twitter and stay tuned. We're going to be we're hoping to roll out some really exciting stuff and some more fun content in the coming months. So yeah, shoot us a follow and come for the Davidson and A10 takes, and like stay for the dual personality between me and Orioles fan and our other contributors, Yankees fans. It's a really fun time.
It is. You guys should go follow the Belk Report if you haven't already. Joe, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
All right. We are now joined by a good friend of the pod, Sam Basil of House Enterprise, who I believe has now just set the record for shortest amount of time across three appearances on this podcast. We're inside of 5.5 months. Sam, it's been a weird time for Fordham basketball. Kyle Neptune leaves to take the Villanova job. He has not officially, but it seems almost official, that the associate head coach, Keith Ergo, is going to be taking over. What was your first reaction to Neptune leaving and your first reaction to the choice of Ergo?
So, well, first off, I'd like to give my reaction to being a record setter on the 3-Bid League podcast. Quite an honor. So thank you for having me on again. I think, you know, like a lot of Fordham fans and a lot of people who follow the program, I kind of went through like a bit of like the 7 stages of grief when I found out that Kyle Neptune was leaving the program and in the ensuing days. First, I was just, you know, I was in shock. You know, I was not expecting Neptune to be leaving the program after 1 year. I don't really think Neptune was expecting to be leaving the program after 1 year, if you ask me. But I think it was kind of one of those things where, you know, Coach Jay Wright was leaving Villanova. He's retiring. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, Neptune was so close with him during his time as an assistant, that probably when he went to go take the Fordham job, Jay Wright probably said to him, hey, you know, when I decide to hang it up, like, I'll leave this chair open for you. Not expecting to want to leave it open so soon. And it was one of those things where, you know, at first I was like, man, that really sucks that Kyle Neptune is leaving Fordham after building, you know, what he has built so far at Fordham. I mean, you know, a 16-16 season after, you know, years of being, you know, like getting four, five, six wins in the Atlantic 10 every single year and finishing the year 8-10. But it was probably one of those things, right, where it's like, damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like, you leave, you kind of get some flack for leaving Fordham a bit too early. But if you decide to stay and stick with it at Fordham, you leave the opportunity to coach at Villanova. You know what I mean? I can't imagine it was an easy decision for Neptune. But you know, it's kind of what he had to do for his career. But, you know, moving forward, I think putting Coach Ergo in place right now, I think is the best move that Fordham could be making right now. And it helps the program, it helps the players, and it helps, you know, everybody involved kind of have a sense of stability within this program. Because I'm sure the players were just as shocked as, you know, a lot of people, you know, that were finding out about it on Twitter. What's great about Coach Ergo, both from a culture standpoint and from a kind of X's and O's standpoint, is first with the culture. I mean, you saw on Twitter that almost every single player on last year's Fordham team, you know, whether they were graduating this year or coming back for next year, you know, they were so vocal about, you know, Coach Ergo being the next man for the job, how confident they were that he could be the one to take over. Obviously, he has a very good relationship with the players. As someone who went to all the Fordham home games last season to cover them, you know, Coach Ergo was very vocal on the bench, in huddles, you know, with his players. After every post game for WFUV that I saw, you know, on the press table, he was the one giving the post game interviews. You know what I mean? So he has that connection with the media. He has a connection with the players. And then at the end of the day, you know, Fordham's going from a guy who, you know, was an assistant under Jay Wright to another guy who was an assistant under Jay Wright. So in terms of, you know, what you liked from an X's and O's standpoint from Kyle Neptune, you're still getting that from Coach Ergo. So I think, and you're also getting, you know, the dynamic changes that Neptune made to this Fordham roster, you know, still within the program. So, you know, a quick decision by Fordham, it probably wasn't, you know, they probably would have liked to have had more time to, you know, kind of figure this out. But I think for what you have and the circumstances, keeping Coach Ergo on as the head coach for at least this season is the best possible move that Fordham could make.
Yeah, and this is kind of reminiscent of what happened with Notre Dame football a few months ago. Coach shockingly leaves, and then the players basically come out screaming. For them, it was Marcus Freeman, their defensive coordinator, that everybody just wanted him to be the guy. They wanted the continuity to stay. they wanted the other assistants to stick around. I think this situation is a little bit different because it doesn't seem like there is contempt at Kyle Neptune as he walks out the door.
No.
Whereas for Notre Dame, those players probably could have been a little bit less pumped up that they were losing their head coach. This situation, like, it was every morning. It was Antrell Charlton. It was Kyle Rose. It was Chuba Ohams hitting Twitter, declaring that Keith Ergo needed to be the guy.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to add in, too, like, Fordham's got a really solid recruiting class coming in. They've got three stars coming in all at once, which, I mean, you would know better than me, but I feel like that hasn't happened in the Bronx in quite a while. Do you think that might have been a factor too, trying to keep this good recruiting class together? And I'm sure Ergo had to have played a role in helping land these guys.
Oh, 100%. And also, you know, it was a mix of trying to keep that recruiting class, because I'm sure those guys, you know, Will Richardson, Angel Montas, and Ramad Dean, those are the three incoming freshmen for Fordham that we have right now. All some of the most talented recruits that I think you've seen come into Fordham as freshmen in a very long time. I think a big reason why, you know, having Ergo stay in there is because, you know, he's probably met those guys already. You know what I mean? He's probably met them on a recruiting trip. They've probably come to the school. They've gotten very familiar with him. So, yeah, you obviously don't want those guys to decommit to Fordham and go somewhere else. Also, this Coach Neptune leaving the program comes like 9 days before the transfer portal was supposed to close. And since then, it's been pretty much a week since this announcement was made that Neptune was leaving. And not a single Fordham player has entered the transfer portal outside of Ahmad Harrison and Cameron Cunningham, who had already done so, you know, a couple weeks before. So I think the fact that, you know, this team is still sticking together just shows that this they want to continue. They want to continue, you know, the trajectory that they were on, and they don't really feel like Kyle Neptune leaving is going to completely just, you know, topple that, which I think is very commendable. And I think it really speaks to, you know, what – I mean, it's honestly a credit to Coach Neptune. You know what I mean? It really speaks to, like, the culture that he built in just 1 year at Fordham. You know what I mean?
And given that it's been just 1 year, there's really no way to separate, was it Kyle Neptune just doing an above and beyond job last year, or was it this whole staff? Typically, once you get to year 4 or 5 of a coach having a lot of success, you see that assistant turnover. And if that guy can keep cranking it out with different assistants, then you know he's a great program builder. Now, I don't doubt that Kyle Neptune is a great program builder right now, because if nothing else, he put together this staff. But we don't know how much of it was Neptune, how much of it was having Ergo and Trey Woodall there in practice every day. And that's the kind of thing that I guess we'll really start to find out these first 2 years here.
Yeah, and someone else I think we should definitely be giving credit to is the athletic director right now for Fordham, Ed Cole. In the same year that Neptune stepped in to take over as athletic director, Ed Cole came in for his first year as, you know, full-time athletic director for Fordham University. And you see him on social media. I mean, he's an advocate, not just for the men's and women's basketball teams, but every single athletic program at Fordham. He loves the Rams. He eats, sleeps, and breathes Fordham athletics. And I think that is a huge reason for why a lot of these team, a lot of these players and a lot of these assistant coaches have decided to stick with the program. So, you know, just another name that I think is just worth giving a lot of credit for.
All right. So we'll kind of pivot now to the actual roster.
Yeah.
We talked about this, you and I, off the air weeks ago, and we thought that it was a dead no. Then he made some comments himself. Have you been able to figure out, does Chuba Ohams still have eligibility?
No, absolutely no. He's like way past any sort of eligibility. As far as I know, I've checked it. I've checked it many, many times. But I mean, think about it. He entered Fordham in the fall of 2016. I entered Fordham in the fall of 2016. So I went through 4 years of undergrad, and then Chuba Ohams played for 2 more seasons after that. So that's a redshirt season plus the extra season of COVID eligibility. So unless, you know, he can find – unless he can, like, crack open every single NCAA rule book and find some loophole there, I really think he's out. And plus, he declared for the NBA draft. I really think pro ball, whether it be, you know, in the NBA, the G League, somewhere in Europe, like, I really think pro ball is in his near future. And I think that's kind of what he wants to focus on. You know what I mean? It's hard. Like, yes, with eligibility being so weird now in college sports, I'm sure a lot of players will, like, try to, you know, rely on the comfortability of playing at their school for as long as possible. But you also don't want to linger on that too long. You know what I mean? Like, the body of work that Chuba Oham's put on this season is really enough to get him a contract somewhere, you know?
Yeah, and so in the 2018 season, he played 3 games. And then in the actual COVID season, he only played 16 minutes total for the year. So, look, the way that the NCAA just hands out waivers, he probably could get one off of that. Now, he also played in the Reese's College All-Star Game, which absolutely not one person on the planet understands whether or not that ends your eligibility or not. He's in the NBA draft. He signed with an agent already, but it's at this point tough to track down whether which agents are certified with the NCAA that allow you to come back. So all signs point to him being done, but he himself claimed a few weeks ago that he's still at eligibility. So we'll see. I mean, to me, like you said, he's been there 6 years already. He's, I believe, 25 years older at this point. It's probably time for him to go pro unless he really feels like this year's team can make some sort of memorable postseason run. Maybe it's just the NIT that he would want to come back for, but if he doesn't feel confident that they're going to be a postseason team, then there probably is no point.
Yeah, it's so tough. And I think you're right. Like, if he's coming back this year, I think you really need a good reason to. Not that, you know, playing another year at Fordham is not good enough of a reason, but what I'm saying is you need to, you know, if he's going to do that, like, Fordham's going to need to win 20 games. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to need to make the NIT. I think it'd be really important for them to do that. And, you know, with the way that this program is going, I mean, I do see some sort of postseason in Fordham's future. I don't really see that in the CBI or CIT. I think A-10 schools tend to avoid that. But you know what? If Fordham can kind of be one of those 4 schools from the A-10 that make the NIT every year, I totally see that happening. Next year, I don't know. But – you know, if Chuba thinks he can do it and thinks that Fordham can make it, I don't see why not.
So we largely, even with Oham's most likely leaving, we largely understand the Fordham rotation. They bring back the 3 guards, Rose, Quisenberry, and Antrell Charlton. They bring back their starting power forward in Simbilla. Whole bunch of random backups, Nowitzki, Pat Kelly, few guys. They bring in all those new freshmen. But to me, the biggest concern with this team is they lost their 2 best individual defenders. Josh Colon-Navarro, we know, is out of eligibility. And like we said, Oham's is most likely gone. So do you have any idea how they could replace the defensive contributions that those two made?
It's going to be tough. I think it's really going to come down to what these 3 freshmen bring. You know what I mean? From what I've seen, I've tried to find as much, you know, tape on them as I could, but, you know, YouTube high school mixtapes can be a kind of a mixed bag. You know what I mean? Depending on what kind of highlights guys like to show. And I gotta say, all 3 of these guys can shoot the ball. I mean, they can score. They, you know, they're really good at, you know, the jelly hooks and stuff like that. But I haven't seen a huge amount of defensive film on any of these guys. So I think the move right now for Fordham next year is to fully go in on the Villanova 4-out style, right? And just try and shoot the lights out of everybody. Like, we've seen so many schools in the A-10 do over the past couple of years. Last season, I think they started out with that 4-out kind of thing. And then when Darius Quisenberry got hurt, they kind of moved to, you know, 2 big men on the floor at all times. So you'd have, like, Oham's and Simbilla on the court at one point. And then you kind of have like your second line of Nowitzki and Pat Kelly, and then like kind of like whatever mixed match of those four guys you would need depending on the moment. But I think now with Ohams and all that size leaving, I think you just got to go four guards at all times and just try and win by just, you know, shooting the three well and just being a consistent offensive team. So who knows what Fordham's defense will look like next year. It's really tough to say.
Well, I mean, overall, though, I think with Fordham, you have to respect the continuity that they had. I mean, you're really not losing any key contributors to the transfer portal. In addition to these three highly touted freshmen, though, do you know if the Rams are actively after anyone currently in the portal? Or just in general, do you see any team needs where over the next couple of weeks you're hoping that Fordham picks up a certain type of player?
I think right now the type of player that they just need is like what I just said. I mean, it's like, I don't really know what Fordham's defensive sets are going to look like this year. And so I think that's exactly what they need to do. I think they need to pick up. And again, like Darius Quisenberry, I think he does a lot of the things that Josh Colon-Navarro could do. I think, you know, in terms of drawing charges and being like a really pressing defender, I think Colon-Navarro had a slight advantage there. And Quisenberry was a bit more, you know, he's more of a scorer. But if they can get another like small, fast, defensive focused guard in the transfer portal, I think that would be an absolute slam dunk for Fordham. You know what I mean? Because I mean, you've already got like the defensive bigs. You've already got guys that can shoot. You've got Antrell Charlton, who's, you know, Coach Neptune described him as kind of like, you know, the coach on the floor. I mean, you know, he doesn't really play the point guard a lot, but he takes the ball up all the time. He's always calling plays. He's like pointing to guys, like, you know, telling guys to get into their matchups, you know, making cuts. So I think they've got all those pieces there. So if they can just get kind of a guy to play the same role that Josh Colon-Navarro did, whether that be as a starter or off the bench, probably off the bench, I think that would be huge for Fordham moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, replacing Colon-Navarro is going to be really tough. He's a very unique player. And we see his perfect, like, NBA spirit animal now coming out this week. He was Jose Alvarado. Where undersized guard. I'm not entirely sure how good he actually was on offense, but he was such a pest, such an irritant. And you would see it as he really pissed off the Duquesne guards this year, probably more so than anybody else. And you just almost see this frustration from players that were better than him, just not wanting to go up against him. So that's a unique skill that's very, very tough to replace.
Yeah, like if you can't beat a guy at what he's good at, just don't let him do what he's good at. And that's what Josh Colon-Navarro was good at, you know? So I think they just need that energy. Like, I mean, the comparison that I would always kind of reach for, and I feel like I would kind of get a little chirp for, because I know, you know, it's a bit drastic, but in terms of just like on paper play style, I mean, I saw some, like, a lot of parallels to like Trae Young, in terms of how Trae Young plays defense, and the fact that, like, I don't know if you watched the Knicks Hawks series in last year's playoffs, but I mean, you know, Trae Young made himself a villain by playing the same defense that Josh Colon-Navarro does. Like, that's how, like, you want guys to hate being guarded by you, and I think that's what Colon-Navarro did, and I think that's another just the type of guy that Fordham should be looking for in the portal.
I get the point, but I think we do need to issue a quick apology to Josh Colon-Navarro. It is disrespectful to compare him defensively to Trae Young. Trae tries to do the same things in big games where he cares, but he is nowhere near the defender that Josh Colon-Navarro was, despite being an NBA player. So
Colon-Navarro is way more consistent at it than Trae Young. Yeah. Like, it's a tough comparison, because it's like Trae Young's got his moments, but it's like you don't know what Trae Young you're going to get from day to day. With Josh Colon-Navarro, though, you know who you're getting from day to day, and he's a presence.
So we'll close it out here. Outside of Fordham, and I will give you the caveat, you cannot pick the Uri Collins saga. What have you found to be the most interesting thing to happen here in this first month of the offseason across the A-10?
That's so tough because, I mean, I feel like there's just so much going on right now. I feel like the amount of guys from St. Bonaventure that have entered the portal is very interesting to me today, especially a couple of the names that dropped in today. I'm totally blanking.
Dom Welch.
Dom Welch. Yeah, I was like, I couldn't believe that because people were talking. I feel like all we've been talking about amongst, you know, the guys at A10 talk and, you know, around like A10 Twitter in general is how many guys on St. Bonaventure were like ready, like had another year of eligibility. And after, you know, winning in 2021 and then, you know, not really going out the way that they wanted to, but making the semifinals of the NIT, it seemed like they were really ready to like kind of run it back. And, you know, everyone's gone. Especially at a time where you know, people were talking about, I think the name that people really thought was going to leave was Mark Schmidt, and he's still there. So it's like, you know, you thought if he was staying that the rest of the guys were going to stay for one more year, but it doesn't really seem like that's going to be happening anymore. So a bit disappointing, honestly, if I'm going to be honest. I would have loved to have seen the Bonnies, you know, have one more run at it, but other than that, I mean, I just think it's a really exciting time. I mean, Archie Miller to URI, I think that's going to be super fun. I think URI is already going to be like a major presence next year. I'd like to see how they kind of shoot up in the preseason poll if they do. But other than that, I think it's a great time to be a fan of A10 basketball and a great time, you know, to have a podcast about A10 basketball, you know?
Yeah, we're already closing in on about 50% of our normal off-season podcast outtake, and it's not even May. Just like John Rothstein, we have yet to sleep. I do want to go back to the St. Bonaventure thing you mentioned. So Jalen Attaway is going pro, and then other than that, 9 players are in the portal. That does not include Kyle Lofton or Ashuna Shunahi, who are both in the NBA draft, but have left themselves the options to come back. So you do all that math. The only guy still left on the Bonaventure roster at the moment from last year is Justin Njoc Traore, the Canadian guard who played about 15 minutes on the season.
Wow. One man against the world.
So yeah, here is this.
Tale,
this is
tale
my
of two halves of New York between their roster and Fordham's.
So this was my question to Tyler off the record the other day, but I mean, I think you're the first perfect person to ask. What are the odds that Fordham's the best New York team in the Atlantic 10 next year? Because I think it's very possible.
It could happen. You know, depending on who comes back for St. Bonaventure, because, you know, with Lofton and Oshun being kind of the last two guys in their core, because we know that their bench barely ever played last season, you know what I mean? So their core is essentially that there was their starting lineup. If it's just them and they go undrafted, just like Chuba, I think those guys, you know, can kind of land on their feet with a professional contract, even if they don't get drafted into the NBA on draft night. They can go to the G League. They can go somewhere else, play in Europe, you know, get it gone on a 2-way contract. So, you know, if the whole idea of running it back next year just kind of fizzles out, we might just be looking at a completely new St. Bonaventure team. And Fordham is going into this season, I think, you know, like what we've seen on social media, I think the main, like, pillar of this team this upcoming season is their chemistry, how much they wanted to stay together, how much they care about, you know, winning with Coach Ergo, winning with each other. That, yeah, I mean, I could totally see them, you know, beating the Bonnies in one or two games next year.
And we'll close it out here because this is something that's normally said about Fordham or said about LaSalle by their own fans. So let's say Bonaventure does finish below Fordham this year. They are the weaker New York team in the A-10. And then they drop one of their rivalry games to either Canisius, Niagara, or Siena. Do they then become eligible for St. Bonaventure to the Metro tweets?
I don't think so. I mean, maybe I would like like a couple of those on Twitter because I love the banter, but I really could not see that happening. Because Bonnie, I mean, the Bonnies, like, no matter what, like, you have one bad year for St. Bonaventure, and, like, there's still a historic program, you know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, it gets to a point where maybe it kind of sucks when people are still repping a 77 NIT win in 2022, but at the same time, like, that's just what you gotta do, you know what I mean? Like, so no, I can't get behind that. As someone who's always been so frustrated by Fordham to the Mac tweets, I couldn't do that to someone else. Maybe I'm too nice though, I don't know.
Yeah, we've had nothing but nice things to say about the Bonnies for 2 years, so
yeah,
I think it's fair game if we want to chirp at them a little bit this year.
Yeah, and they deserve some not nice things to be said this year.
Yeah,
I won't call you guys out, but you know, if there's, like, you know, a mob of Twitter fan, like, people on Twitter just beating down on the Bonnies, I don't know if I'll like be there to throw in a couple.
The VCU punches. Guys will start it.
Oh, of course. Well, who else would?
All right, Sam. If anyone is not following you at this point, that's just a complete screw up, because you've been on here enough to prove your worthiness of their Twitter time. So if not, where can they find your work?
Yeah, so you can find me a couple places. You can find me on A10 Talk, where anytime there's some big Fordham news, I'm always on there, as well as hosting the A10 Talk podcast with Daniel Frank. You can get that wherever you find your podcast, definitely on Spotify. You can find me on Twitter at Sam12878. That's pretty much where I you know, repost all of my work from everything I write for, and, you know, kind of give, you know, all of my you know, unconnected thoughts and ramblings, as well as on houseenterprise.com. That's house-enterprise.com. That's where I write about the A10 in general. I write about a lot of New York City based hoops, and then I kind of talk about, like, you know, whatever I want, like football, baseball, etc. So if you want to find some more stuff from me, definitely check that out.
All right, Sam Basil, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And thank you all for once again listening to the 3Bid League podcast. As always, if you enjoyed the show, please give us 5 stars on iTunes, leave us a review. If you have any comments, if you have any ideas for things you'd like to hear over this offseason, shoot us a message on Twitter at the number 3BidLeaguePod or an email 3BidLeague@gmail.com. Everybody, continue to enjoy the offseason in the coming next month.